Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When I was a kid, my dad was a cop, and we spent 5 seasons of Loose Units, the podcast, talking through his cases, but the unexplained and the paranormal kept rearing their heads, because the story doesn't end when the killing is done. Welcome to Loose Units, the Shadow Files. Hello and welcome to Loose Units, the Shadow Files. Last week we dealt with the beginnings of the Snowtown murders. Specifically, we looked at Snowtown as a location and what the murders did to the populace of the town. Now, if you haven't already listened to that, we recommend going back and listening to part one, because this week we're looking at the crimes. Dad, you have found the court transcript. Could you walk us through the case for the Crown?
Paul, I can. So in this particular case, the Crown, their case is that the murders were committed as part of a joint enterprise between the accused, which had its object or common purpose the killing of persons it was considered appropriate or necessary to kill. The Crown allege that the enterprise began with the intention of killing persons believed to be pedophiles, but, and here's the critical point, Paul, but developed to encompass others it was considered appropriate to kill for varying reasons. And that is a sort of an overview of the case as put down by the Crown. So it's a classic, classic case.
Today we're talking about the actual victims of these murders. So not just last week we looked at Snowtown as a place, and this week we're looking at the victims, and all of these people are real people who died under terrifying circumstances. Look, Dad, I would like you to run through for me the victims chronologically, because the fact is, rarely has there been a crime that we've looked at that has had such a high and such a specifically cruel body count. The victims numbered 12, is that correct? 12 people.
Yeah.
And the first was killed at 22 years old, and it was the 31st of August, 1992. Clinton Trezise, could you walk us through the Snowtown Killer's first victim?
That we know of.
That we know of, yes.
And as we're doing this, I'm also acutely aware that these people are still alive, the offenders.
Yes, all four of them are still alive in prison. Yeah.
And that's disturbing. So Clinton Trezise, he was 22 years of age. The opinion of the offenders was he was a pedophile. What they did, they lured him. So on his fateful day, they lure him to Bunting's house. And ostensibly, just it's a social visit.
Just quickly, this is John Bunting, just to be clear. This is John Bunting, who is the primary perpetrator in these murders. Mm. When you say they, we're dealing with multiple people here, aren't we?
There are four offenders.
Yes.
So we've got John Justin Bunting.
Yes.
We've got Robert Joe Wagner. We have James Vlasakis and Mark Hayden. Okay.
Now, Mark Hayden was convicted for helping to get rid of the bodies. Was he actually involved in the murders themselves? He was, I mean, I feel like he was sort of along for the ride. But, I mean, when we talk about Bunting, Bunting is the main bad guy here.
Yeah, he's the guy that has been described by many people as being somewhat of a, I guess, a chameleon. Certainly smart.
But he basically coerced these people. Not coerced, because the fact is they did it of their own free will. But he created a... He ran this whole show and was the chief perpetrator of these murders. And at this point, the first victim, Clinton...
Who was 22 years of age, who was, who they regarded, the let's refer to the group as, I'm going to refer to them as the crew. They were vigilantes.
Well, let's just, I mean, I've heard that Bunting, in his house, in his spare room, you've all seen things like True Detective where, you know, they open the roller door and you see a, what's called a rock spider wall, which is a map or kind of a grid of photos and pieces of string between them, a kind of case that they have built up to track down things. In the case of Bunting, he was using these handwritten notes and string and whatnot to create a web of people that he thought were pedophiles or homosexuals or things that he deemed, you know, worthy of getting killed. And then he would pick someone from the name and then he would basically... sick his group on them. And the first group, the first person to feel his wrath was Clinton.
But Paul, I think it's really important. You've mentioned this spider web of, and it's, have you seen, you've seen photos of it?
No, I haven't seen photos of it.
It's fascinating. And it's so, it's kind of like having a massive whiteboard that took up basically a whole wall in Bunting's house. The thing is, without sort of getting too far ahead of ourselves, one of his, I guess in terms of badness, there was Bunting, but then he's sort of 2IC, I guess comparing with, say, Hitler, and you'd have, you know, Goering, Goebbels, all his sort of, you know, super high-ranking scum. There was this guy, Robert Joe Wagner. But Wagner, he had been in a relationship with Lane, a transvestite who used to, you know, dress in drag. But the kind of the genesis of this whole terrible story is Bunting's ability to collect information, as would the police or any military organization do. They collect intelligence. Bunting would collect the intelligence through Lane. And they would have meetings. And the, you know, I guess we'll call Robert Wagner Bunting's right-hand man. They would get together and they used Lane as a source of information to elicit the details of known pedophiles within that area. So that would then enable Bunting to create this fantastic and fairly complex web that was a physical sort of manifestation of all the leads, the clues. So you can imagine, like a spider web, invariably, as in real life, people get trapped in that web. Now, once you're in the web, you're fucked.
So they used Vanessa Lane to fish in the community and build up a list of people that they fully intended to kill.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
So Clinton is the first one to suffer their wrath, and Clinton wasn't found for 2 years.
No.
Clinton was killed in 1992 and found on the 16th of August, 1994. How did the murder actually take place? Now, typically speaking, the first murder in a string of serial killings is, it's, I mean, much like any body of work, it is a, it's an early iteration of what happens later. And what,
well, it's the earliest. Yeah, you're right, Paul. It's the earliest that we know of. That's what always worries me about these stories.
Sure. Okay.
Can one assume that the judiciary has got all of the victims? Because there is a very interesting catch to this whole story, and that is something that happened prior to what we're talking about. We are using Clinton as the number one, the first, but that's actually not the case. There was another case prior to, but that was thrown out of court. And it's kind of weird, but we will get to that later on, not in this episode. But it's, so there were things happening in the past. And then I was doing some research. So basically they lure Clinton to Bunting's house. And imagine the scene. And we need to use our imaginations, because I was discussing with you yesterday, Paul, off air, and I said to you, are you aware of these situations in law where you have these prohibition notices, these orders by the court?
Where you can't actually, so after the court case, there are certain things, like a gag order. You can't,
correct.
Certain details will never be
released. Never ever to be released. Now, Paul, do you recall the number I said to you yesterday?
Oh, shit, it was high.
More than 250 orders that will never be released to the public.
So given the graphic nature of what we do know, I shudder to think at how bad it got.
Well, it's just terrible. So they, in essence, and it's premeditated, so at some place in that room, Bunting had a shovel. And a shovel is a sharp, bladed instrument with a wooden handle. We all know what a shovel is.
And Clinton's invited in on, for just a social visit.
Social visit. And he more than likely, bearing in mind I was not there, but the way I see it is that he would have been struck, I imagine, I'm not privy to the post-mortem results, but I imagine he was struck from behind at first.
Yeah.
So it would have been a surprise blow, and they basically stoved his head in with a shovel.
Now, because they thought he was what?
A pedophile.
Okay. So they'd settled on him as needing to be killed because they thought he was a pedophile, or they said they thought he was a pedophile. Mm. And so they lure him into the house, they kill him with a shovel, he's 22 years old, and then what do they do? Because I know the body was, as we established, found in lower light in 1994. At this point, I don't believe they connected him to Bunting, and I read somewhere that there were two episodes of Australia's Most Wanted that talked about the unsolved murder of Clinton. So it was only later that they actually connected them. But so apparently he was found in a shallow grave in a area called Lower Light in South Australia. That was on the 16th of August 1994. At this point, people who aren't familiar with the chronology are probably thinking, hey, but isn't this about bodies in barrels? Yeah, but at this point they've buried him in a shallow grave and he's not, so this is the first victim, and they haven't actually started moving the bodies over to Snowtown yet. So at this point, it's just a terrible, terrible crime that's happened. How long was it before the next murder? It was a couple of years, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was 95, the 25th of December.
Right.
To the 21st of January. So late 95, early 96. The guy's name was Ray Allen Peter Davies.
Right.
Now, this is an interesting story, if you can sort of use that term. But he was intellectually disabled, okay? Which is a little bit of a thread going through some of these victims. And he lived in a caravan in the rear yard of a home owned by Suzanne Allen. And Suzanne Allen
was the ex-lover. Yes, that's John Bunting's ex, yeah?
Yes.
And okay.
It's what happened was Suzanne told Bunting that Ray Davies had molested her grandsons. Okay?
Right.
So then Bunting and the crew, they then murder. Okay?
Now Davies is living in he's living in a caravan parked out the back of Suzanne's house. So they know where he is, and they've added him to the rock spider wall in the spare room. And I mean, it's just based on
an allegation.
First of all, at this point, do you think Suzanne knew? Do you think Suzanne knew what Bunting had done to the first victim? Okay, right. So Suzanne maybe drops the fact that she thinks that Davies has come onto her grandkids, which is, I've got photos of all the victims here. The thing about Davies is he was 26 when he died. It's just it's so terrible. Yes, he was intellectually disabled.
Mm.
Yes.
And when they killed him in the caravan. Did right. you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
And there was blood from our soul to breakfast. Okay? It was completely fucked up. They then get rid of the body. When I say get rid of, they you know, they don't ever really get rid of anyone because, as we know, they all turn up later.
Yeah.
But here's something a bit creepy.
Mm-hmm.
He and his offsider, Bunting and the offsider, what they do is they clean the caravan up. Okay? And this is a little bit of a sad part of the story, is that Ray Davies was never, ever reported missing. So imagine being in that person in society that no one really ever missed you. You just kind of vanished. And what Bunting and his offsider did, they cleaned the caravan, they then towed it to another location, and within 2 months of the murder, they then sold the caravan. That's creepy, because someone bought that caravan.
Yeah.
And they went to a lot of trouble. They even repainted it. And, like, yeah.
This is where things get... Look, I've tried to avoid graphic detail here because I don't believe it generally helps. But I'm going to read and sort of futz with the details of an account that I read, Dad, that I think is useful. So the fact is... So first of all, Suzanne Allen's daughter, Annette, is the mother to the you know, grandkids we were talking about before. And hang on a sec. Yeah. And Annette spent Christmas Day in 1995 with her mother and Davies. And the next day her son claimed that Davies sexually assaulted him.
Hmm.
And so at that point, and this is where it gets really kind of squirrely. So Annette and Alan and Suzanne Allen report this to the police. Yeah?
Hmm.
And then after that, Annette sees Bunting and Suzanne cleaning out the caravan.
Hmm.
Right? So there's, at this point, there's not just witnesses. There's also a police report into a potential crime involving this person. None of these strings get connected until much later. But here's what I really struggle with. The actual method of the murder... of this murder is particularly hateful, I would say.
Hmm.
So, in 1995, Bunting owned up to James Lysakis that he had killed Davies, okay? So, at this point, I think this is important, Bunting doesn't really have this crew yet. He's kind of operating solo. So, Bunting tells Lysakis that he's killed Ray Davies. Now, this whole group is extremely incestuous. I'm just going to read from this account, okay?
Hmm.
All right. Bunting recounted how Lysakis' own mother, Elizabeth Harvey, wife of John Bunting, had stabbed Davies in the leg just before their mutual friend Robert Wagner strangled the man to unconsciousness with jumper cables. Years later, in court testimony, Lysakis stated that according to Bunting's story, Bunting and Wagner loaded Davies' unconscious form into the truck of a Holden Tirana. They drove 90 minutes to the northeast to a residence in the town of Bacara. They tossed Davies into a bathtub, and I'm not going to describe what they did there, but it is directed at a specific part of the body, which is just incredibly cruel.
Mm.
And then in 1999, Ray Davies' body was found at the rear of the premises that had been previously occupied by Bunting. The hole was filled in by Bunting and Wagner with bricks, soil, and concrete. So they're hiding the bodies at this point.
Yep.
And this second body, the body of Davies, savaged as it was, was... I mean, it's interesting that they thought to drive him way, way, way away from town to this place called Bacara to actually carry out the crime.
Mm. Yeah.
Didn't you say it happened in the caravan? Which means... Does it mean they drove the caravan out?
Well, they did tow the caravan, but that was prior to when they sold it.
Right.
No, but it stayed there until they cleaned it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The murder took place. Okay? So what you're saying is they were actually torturing a dead body?
Well, no, I'm just reading from here. It says that they drove him...
Oh, okay. He was still alive.
Yeah, so they did, you know, they... Yeah.
Now, the only reason I said, and that might sound weird to the listener, is, oh, they tortured him when he was dead.
Yeah.
I know that sounds odd. Mm. I mean, is that torture? No, that's mutilation or desecration. But we also know from future victims that they did and committed all sorts of atrocities on deceased as well.
That's true. We'll get to that later. But Dad, just to be clear, they stabbed him and then strangled him to unconsciousness. If they did that in the caravan, that would explain why they cleaned the caravan up.
Yeah, correct.
Yep. Okay. Because then they put him in the trunk of the Holden Torana. Okay, great. So we've got a horrible picture here. Honestly, Dad, at this point, we have so many victims to get through. I hate rushing through because I feel like we're not paying them their due respect. I think we need to move on to victim number three, Michelle Gardner. So the third victim is Michelle Gardner, a transgender woman who was killed by these absolute psychopaths. Michelle was living in the residence of Nicole Zarita, who's a cousin of Robert Wagner's wife. So as you pointed out last week, everybody who is killed is connected to these people. It's all one big web, right? They didn't have to look very far. Being openly transgender around these people is a death sentence, effectively.
Oh,
right?
Without a doubt. And so what they did when they murdered Michelle is they put her in a barrel, but they couldn't close the lid. Did you know about that? So they actually removed her foot so they could put the lid on properly. And I want the listeners to be sort of pay a little bit of attention to this particular case, because this is a case where down the track, another victim is inserted somehow or other into the same barrel as Michelle. That's just a fun fact to look forward to in the future.
Okay, so the actual murder is a real problem. I mean, so Michelle Gardner was playing with Wagner's kids in the front yard, and then something Michelle did made Wagner mad, and then Bunting and Wagner grabbed Michelle, took her to Murray Bridge, and then they strangled her, and then every time she passed out, they made her they like woke her up and stood her up again and then kept strangling her. And then they staged a fake robbery at Michelle's home, stealing belongings to kind of... Here's part of my problem is, no matter what sort of weird manifesto they had and whatever motives they claimed, they started claiming the welfare payments of a lot of these victims. Now, that started with Davies, right? That started with Davies because Davies was receiving welfare payments. So they started trying to make money off of these people, which kind of undermines whatever twisted thing they think they're doing, because really they're doing it to make money, right? So Michelle is put in a barrel, doesn't fit, so they remove her foot so that the drum can be closed. Right, so that was September the 10th, 1997. So they're already building up quite a list of people, but there's still a lot to go. The next victim was much older than the rest. And that's...
This is interesting. This is very interesting. Yeah. This is Barry Lane.
Well, at this point, Barry Lane was Vanessa Lane. And as you said before, Vanessa Lane was being used to help build the web of people. Vanessa was, you know...
Vanessa was one of the source, primary sources of information for Bunting to create the web. Lane was so keyed in to the local community, and one might say, you know, that side of the community that was perhaps, that let's say Bunting actually focused on, and in his eyes was somewhat, you know, depraved. And the bizarre thing is that Bunting had sort of gathered all this incredible information, and then at some point, so Lane was ultimately, you know, became a victim. But in this particular case, what they did is that they, and it's a really, really terribly unnerving thing that throughout the last, I guess, 50 or 60 years, some murderers, serial killers, psychopaths have actually used recording devices. And in this particular case with Lane, they recorded Lane, who, from what I can glean, was very upset in the recording, but they got Lane basically to say that he no longer wanted to see his mother, who obviously lived in that area, and he was moving to Queensland for good. So, and another thing that Bunting and the crew used to do is that they would record the victims, and they would also, during torture, they would get information about, you know, all their bank details. And so prior to killing, they'd have this sort of, this recording of all the details they needed to then, you know, continue claiming benefits, knowing that they'd killed them, which is insidious as well. And they murdered Lane.
The murder of Lane was was interesting because Lane had major issues with Clinton's murder, and Lane told her mother, and who just happened to be Bunting's ex-girlfriend, about it. Right. So it seems like telling people in this circle that you have issues with things is going to get you killed. So Bunting finds out that Lane's been talking about his crimes, right? And Bunting's also been using Lane to act as a kind of informant on the community and bring him the names of people who he thought deserved to be killed. So on the 17th of October in 1997, Bunting, Wagner, Trevelyan, they pick Lane up. Yeah. And then the next day, Lane's mum gets a call from her, and Bunting makes Lane verbally abuse her mum. And the mum in the background can hear Trevelyan and laughing, also telling her what to say to her mum, right?
God.
And then they finish the call and they torture Lane at her fiancé's home, because she's got a fiancé now. She's shacked up with someone else. And they torture her to get her bank details. And then they crush her toes with pliers. And then they strangle her to death. And then they've got her car. So Bunting has her car, her vehicle, and her welfare payments again. And Lane is kept, you guessed it, in a barrel.
But in the barrel, sharing the space with the previous victim, that they'd removed her foot.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking, they remove a foot so they can put the lid on, and then all of a sudden, I don't know how this works, Paul, but they then somehow or other, you know, have room somehow or other to put Lane in. And it's weird how they had those two. It's almost as though they had some unholy alliance in death in terms of Bunting's. I mean, I'm only sort of surmising here. I don't want to get into his mind too much, but it's fucking creepy. And then between November 1997 or around about the 6th of November was the next victim.
The next victim was Thomas Eugenio Trevelyan. Do you find it interesting how all these people are connected?
the police are saying, and people from all over the world that have specialised and really delve deep into the whole thing about serial killers, say that this is so bizarre because all the victims were known within a community
and connected to the prior crimes. And I mean, we were just talking about Trevelyan in connection with Lane.
But Trevelyan, Paul, he had psychiatric problems.
Yeah, he was a paranoid schizophrenic, right? He thought he was a soldier, I think.
He did, and he was kind of shared a house with Vanessa. He assisted in the killing of Lane.
Yep.
This is really upsetting, listeners. And I found this very upsetting because Thomas Trevelyan he definitely had psychological problems, okay? But what Bunting did, so he's assisted in the murder of his flatmate. He's suffering, and from what I can glean, and I don't want to touch on the film too much, but it's if the portrayal is accurate, Trevelyan was very, very disturbed. But what they did to him is so bad and so perverse and so premeditated and so clever. And this is why police investigate hangings so thoroughly, because things are not always as they appear. They took him out into the bush. They got him to stand on a box. They put a noose around his neck. They then kicked the box from underneath him, where he would have hung until he died.
But the thing is, he had a history of suicide attempts. So,
well, isn't that makes it even more chilling and more clever?
Yeah. The assumption was, of course, they find him. They find him in Humbug Scrub, which is in the Adelaide Hills, near Kersbrook, and they've got his suicide attempts on record. So the coroner deems it as a suicide.
Mm. And it wasn't.
Yeah.
And it was just part of the terrible, terrible litany of shit.
Well, the next victim was... Hang on a second, here we go. Well, the next
Gavin
victim...
Gavin Porter.
Yeah, sorry. Gavin Porter. That's right, Gavin Porter. Yep. So the next victim is Gavin Porter, right? Mm. And Porter was also a schizophrenic. And
and a junkie?
Yep, he'd been in and out of institutions.
Yep.
And his mum died. And so he moved to Adelaide from Victoria in 97, where he met Vlasakis and moved in and lived with Vlasakis. And both of them were heroin addicts, right?
Yep. But Paul, do you know why Bunting decided to kill Park Porter?
No, I don't.
Get ready for this. Talk about having the most insanely bizarre and obtuse excuse, but in this particular case, Bunting was accidentally jabbed by a syringe that had been left in the house by Porter. And based on that accidental jabbing, in other words, he'd walked into it, it was on the floor, or, you know, it wasn't being held by Porter, he decided that he was a waste of space and no longer deserved to live.
So he's,
they're Bunting's words.
So he stabs him in the hand with a screwdriver, and then he strangles him. So then Bunting shows Vlasakis Porter's body. So can you imagine being an addict and being shown the dead body of a fellow addict? There's some sort of warning. And then Porter is put in a barrel. And then we're on to... Jesus, this is harrowing. Then we're on to the next victim.
Troy Ude.
Yes, Troy was 21 years old when he was killed.
And he was the half-brother of Vlasakis. But this is very, very important. Troy had molested his half-brother and had been doing it for some time. And in the film, it's portrayed in a very graphic, terrible, terrible way, which I found very disturbing. So Vlasakis tells Bunting that this had happened in previous years, and hey presto, lights out for the half brother. But this was particularly graphic. He was actually dismembered and put in a barrel.
So Vlasakis kind of looked up to Bunting, as a kind of father figure, which was why it was so easy for Bunting to turn Vlasakis into a serial murderer. And so Troy is the half brother of Vlasakis.
Correct. Yep.
And Vlasakis tells Bunting that Troy was molesting him.
Correct.
Right.
So the four of them go into the house and he's asleep. Yeah. The half-brother's asleep.
So Bunting, Wagner and Vlasakis go and they get Troy Ude while he's asleep. Correct?
Yep. Drag him from his bed.
Yep. And they put him in a bathtub where he's handcuffed. And then as they're beating him, they get his, what you guessed it, they get his financial details, right?
Mm. Yeah.
And then the weird part is they make him call them all kinds of things. They make
Correct.
Like God.
Sort of like a deity.
Yeah. It was very, and then again, they do the, oh God. And then they go and they start using the pliers again. So they're torturing him and then they strangle him. And then they use this piece of software called SoundForge to record a message from Yude.
No.
So then, Dad, this is pretty disturbing. In some of the cases we've dealt with in the Shadow Files, people who are about to be killed are forced to send, you know, voicemails or messages to, you know, people who are still alive.
Mm.
Just so that they can kind of twist the facts. So they use a piece of software called SoundForge and they record Yude's voice so that they can play messages from him for victims to, you know, to say things like, oh, I'm going away for a while, you won't see me, to smooth things over, right?
Mm.
So, God, do we go to the next victim? The next victim was Frederick Brooks, aged 18 years old.
Intellectually disabled.
Yeah. So at this point, it's 1998, right? Bunting is convinced that Brooks has been touching young girls, and he starts telling his inner circle that something's going to have to happen, and that's a quote to Brooks. So, September 1998, Brooks has been told that he's been accepted into the Air Force Cadets, which he's really excited about, and he is invited to a party that night, but unfortunately for him, he's also been invited to join Bunting, Wagner, and Vlasakis in a B&E. Now, why he would accept going with them as opposed to this... Anyway, that was the last decision he ever made. They torture him in a bathtub. They handcuff him. They get his bank details. They put lit cigarettes in his ears. God, I'm not even going to read these next details because it's the most horrific, horrific torture. And again, they get him to put his voice into the recording device, into this piece of software. They get his bank information. They make him confess that he's molested people under duress. They inject things into him. They electrocute him. They crush bits of his bodies. And then he just dies. He can't take the torture anymore. So they wrap him in plastic and they put him in the trunk of a car. And then they put him in a barrel. And he was found in the Snowtown Vault. At this point, none of the barrels have been taken to the Snowtown Vault.
Correct.
It's a far-off idea at this point.
Mm.
There's only a few victims left, Dad.
Mm.
But we need to get to those next week.
Cool. Because I'm just, yeah. Oh, I look forward to a breath of fresh air.
Jesus.
A break between episodes.
Because at this point, it's really interesting to me that... all of these crimes are pretty disparate. None of them have really come together yet in the same place. As we established last week, the barrels were found in the vault of the small, unassuming, unremarkable, and at this point, not yet infamous town of Snowtown. Next week, we're going to deal with the final victims, and we're going to talk about how Bunting and his crew decided to make Snowtown the location for the storage of these bodies, and what happened to Bunting and his crew afterwards. These episodes are extremely difficult for us to talk through. I can't imagine how hard they are for people connected to the crime. So we really thank you for sticking in here with us. We're trying to piece together things and we're trying to figure out why and how this happened. And we're trying to build a picture of what happens when one town becomes the focal point for murders that by and large weren't even committed there by people who weren't even from there. So thank you for listening to another episode of Loose Units, The Shadow Files. You're all very strong-stomached, and we really thank you for keeping us company. We will see you next week for another episode of Loose Units, The Shadow Files, but we will see you at the end of this week for a hopefully palate-cleansing episode of Loose Units, Loose Ends. Have a great week, everyone. Oof. Have a lie down, have a strong cup of tea, and we'll see you soon.
All right, all the best. Cheers, bye.
Bye, everyone.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.